Coming up on KUCB News, Aleutian volcanoes are growing active, and rural Alaskans are experimenting with beekeeping. Stay tuned.
Local News is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Monday, June 12, 2017. A trio of Aleutian volcanoes are showing signs of unrest. Most recently, Bogoslav volcano erupted on Saturday, bringing its total to 5 eruptions in the last 2 weeks. Jessica Larson is a geologist with the Alaska Volcano Observatory.
Well, we've had 3 restless volcanoes, Bogoslav, Cleveland, and now Pavlov. Bogoslav has been continuing its eruptive activity that started in December 2016 with a series of small explosions, and now we have some new evidence that there's a lava dome.
A lava dome is a mound of lava that has flowed out of a volcano. Larson says this is the first lava dome for this eruption, but it's typical behavior for Bogoslav overall.
In the past, it's formed towards the ends of the eruption. We don't know exactly if this is happening now, whether the Bogoslav volcano is going to stick with the lava dome and quiet down. It could just keep continuing having its punctuated explosions as well.
Bogoslav's alert level remains at an intermediate watch, according to Larson. The same goes for Cleveland volcano.
Cleveland has been in a sort of a prolonged periodic phase of eruptive activity that includes extrusion of lava in a summit crater, and then periodic explosions that tend to destroy the lava and put up ash clouds.
Meanwhile, scientists have raised Pavlov's alert level from normal to advisory. The AVO says there's been an increase in low-frequency earthquake activity near Pavlov, which sometimes leads to volcanic eruptions. Honeybees aren't native to Alaska, but 4 beekeepers are experimenting with hives in Dillingham. As KDLG's Avery Lill reports, they're hoping to expand their operations beyond the summer and keep their bees alive over winter.
These are calf skin, so they can't sting through them.
Pamela Murphy dons a classic white bee suit, making sure all the zippers are zipped, the Velcro is fastened, and the elastic cuffs are pulled down well over her extra tufts. Then she slides on her calfskin gloves. She's had her bees for about 2 weeks, and she hasn't been stung yet. Murphy's bee box sits in a sunny clearing. Several bees meander toward a small opening in the wooden crate that's about the size of a microwave. The pollen baskets on their hind legs are swollen and bright yellow. Murphy opens the lid to reveal the 9 trays that fill the box. She lifts one up. It's teeming with bees that are beginning to build a honeycomb.
The bees are mostly working on creating the wax comb to have all this space to store honey. And then ultimately, come late August, early September, we'll take the frames out of the honey supers and try to extract what honey we have. And then the ultimate goal is to then take these bees, insulate the hive, and try to winter them over.
That's an unusual goal for beekeepers in Alaska. Honeybees need temperatures above 50 degrees to fly. They need to fly to defecate, and if they don't, they'll become septic and die. So most Alaska beekeepers kill their bees when the temperatures plunge and start over with a new colony in the spring. But Murphy has a strategy, and Bristol Bay's temperatures are mild enough relative to the rest of Alaska that it just might work.
Bees do go into a kind of a hibernation state. We'll put everything into one brood box, so we won't extract all their honey. We want them to keep what they need to survive the winter. We'll insulate, I guess the brood box will insulate it, so we'll hopefully do maybe some controlled climate, maybe put something over them to warm it up so they can get out at least one time in the winter to go to the bathroom.
This beekeeping project began with a February class at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Bristol Bay campus. Don Kogan, a master beekeeper from Fairbanks, taught a weekend crash course in Dillingham. Afterward, four people, counting Murphy, decided to make a go of it and order their own bees. Turns out, even getting bees to rural Alaska can be a chore. Some bees got loose in the cargo hold when the first vendor tried to ship Murphy's bees, and the airline refused to carry that vendor's goods. The second vendor was more successful at keeping the critters contained. Her roughly 20,000 Carniolan bees arrived from California a couple weeks ago. Murphy is in this for more than the honey. Her hive is so new, she'll probably only get a jar or two this year. It's really about the science.
Part of the hive that I have is working with the Brisbane campus and working with Don Kogan to basically do the research and find out, can we winter bees over? What does it take to winter bees over? And between myself and the other three beekeepers, we will gain enough information to be able to, you know, do it again and again and again, and then give that information to Don Kogan, who can then put it into her work and basically have a set of standards in beekeeping in Dillingham, Alaska.
Between the bees and the equipment, Murphy has about $600 invested in her hive. If the bees don't survive the winter, it will be a little over $200 to order more next year. But if the experiment is a success, this will be the first time bees have been successfully wintered over in Dillingham. I'm Avery Lill.
There's a long list of state government services that would grind to a halt on July 1st if Alaska lawmakers can't agree on a budget. Governor Bill Walker says he wants each state department to prepare.
Our focus of what we're doing, you know, today in this particular situation is really focused solely on being prepared. And that's really what it comes down to. As prepared as one can be, I'll put it that way, for July 1.
The shutdown could immediately cost the state more than $150 million. That's because Alaska would be required to pay its laid-off unionized workers for leave time they've built up. It would also pay for workers' unemployment insurance while losing income from DMV fees. Still, many questions remain about the potential shutdown. It's not clear how much commercial fishing would be allowed if the Department of Fish and Game closes. ADF&G Commissioner Sam Cotton says workers will be out on the field until the deadline.
We are working with the Department of Law to determine what we can do. We know that there'd be severe economic distress in a billion-dollar industry, and thousands of jobs could be affected, so we're not taking it lightly.
Cotton says ADF&G is well aware that Bristol Bay's sockeye salmon season peaks around July 4th.
We actively manage in season, so we, especially with salmon, I mean, it's not like another fish. You can wait a while before somebody catches it. You have to catch them when they're there.
State officials are determining which services affecting public life, health, and safety could continue after July 1st. The Division of Motor Vehicles could stop issuing driver's licenses and registrations. New teacher certifications, wastewater permits, and healthcare facility licenses could also be stopped. The House and Senate majorities are deadlocked over next year's budget, as well as a long-term plan to balance the future state budget. The special session is scheduled to end on Friday, although lawmakers have until the end of the month to pass a budget if the governor calls another special session. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski says she finds last week's testimony from fired FBI Director James Comey troubling. Murkowski was in Cordova this weekend for a field hearing of the Senate committee, which she chairs. She said she hadn't yet had a chance to watch Comey's testimony in full since her committee was meeting while he spoke, but Murkowski says she's read enough to raise concerns.
He made some statements that were pretty direct. He believes that the president lied in certain occasions, and that there were pressures directed to him as the FBI director that he did not feel were appropriate. So yes, I think we should look at that and yes, find that troubling.
In his testimony, Comey called President Donald Trump's statements that the FBI was in disarray lies, plain and simple. Comey also testified that the president had asked him to pledge his loyalty, as well as directed him to drop an investigation into former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.